Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Detroit Lions Breakdown Podcast. I'm Joe Kania. With me, as always, is Eric Schlitt from USA Today Lions Wire, and this is the official Lions podcast of USA Today Lions Wire. Eric, the Lions, still undefeated, now at 2-0-1 after a 27-24 victory against the Philadelphia Eagles in the city of brotherly love on Sunday. They didn't make it easy on us, the fans. At the end, but they squeaked it out nonetheless. Now, I believe it's a very Lions thing, maybe the most Lions thing about this season, that the Lions are undefeated after 3 weeks, yet aren't even tied for first place in their division. Only the Lions could pull that off, right?
Well,
half game back of the Packers.
The tie is going to be both a blessing and a curse. It's going to be a curse when it comes to situations like this where you're a half game back. But I also think not losing that game could come back to pay benefits for them down the road. When it comes down to a tiebreaker, a lot of times
10-5-1 would be better than 10-6.
Right, or even 8-7-1. You know what I mean? Is better. Ugh. Right, is better than 8-8. But my point is
obvious. Guy says,
yeah, right. But the Packers won the division 8-7-1 just a few years back.
Yeah, well, that's. I think this is a better division.
Oh yeah, for
than
sure.
What we were dealing with a couple of years ago.
Yeah, regardless of what happens this week, you're still going to enter the bye with a winning record, and you're going to come out of the bye with two NFC North matchups.
Foes. Yeah.
And so you're going to have to be ready. Big one Monday night in Green Bay. Then you host Minnesota. And after those two games, we're going to have a much better assessment, I think, of what this team's potential is. This week is kind of a – we'll get into that as we go. It's kind of a toss-up. There's a lot to like. There's a lot to not like. But coming out of this bye, I mean, look, if you told people you'd have a winning record going into the bye – people would have taken it, 100%. Looking at the schedule that they had, every Lions fan would have took it if you said they'd have a winning record going into the bye.
But everybody's greedy. Now they see this terrible tie against Arizona where they were way ahead and in control.
Well, we'll see how bad that impacts
comes back
or
to
benefits.
Haunt them or not haunt them.
Yeah, yeah. Could go either way.
All right, first things first, let's dive into the injury report.
Yeah.
Number one, we'll mention the Seattle Seahawks. Ziggy Ansah off the injury report. He actually played on Sunday.
Yeah,
all right. Mike Daniels, who's on the Lions defensive line, injured his foot, still out on Wednesday. He was in a boot when he left the game on Sunday, but it was a boot on a foot that he did not previously injure.
Correct. Yeah, the foot, he injured his left foot with the Packers, and that cost him, put him on IR. And cost him the end of the season last year. This one was his right foot, had a boot and some crutches post-game. There's no break. It's just supposed to be a sprain. So then it's just a matter of how quickly can he heal.
Those are long-time injuries in the NFL.
Foot injuries are really tricky. I think, you know, people minimize them because they're like, yeah, it's just, you know, it's a foot. But a foot can have some pretty long-term impacts, especially when you're a 300-pound, you know, Mike Daniels, and your game is based in power and explosion. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how it goes. I mean, Patricia ruled him out of today's practice before practice even started. Talked about it at the press conference. That tells me he's probably out for the week, not going to play against the Chiefs, and we'll see what happens coming out of the bye. But this smells like a more of a long-term injury, just not something that's IR worthy.
Danny Amendola, he's out with a shoulder injury.
Actually, I wrote shoulder, and then because that's what I thought it was, and it changed it. That's my part.
No, it's just upper body
injury. It's chest. It's chest. When he went down, so I pre-wrote the injury report before it was released today, and when he went down, I thought it was his shoulder. So I kind of pre-wrote and guessed shoulder. But they're actually saying it's chest. So when he went down on that, he goes up, he gets that high catch on the sidelines, gets the toes down, lands awkwardly, sells out, makes the play. Great effort, you know what I mean? Sacrificing his body for a pretty critical third down there. But now we'll see what happens. Now, today was a padded practice, so it's not overly surprising that he missed today. But if he misses tomorrow as well, then it starts to get a little bit more worrisome that he might not be available for Sunday.
All right, next up is the one everybody's probably most worried about, Darius Slay and his hamstring.
So, padded practice, and he was in pads. He did some individual drills, not all individual drills, but some of them, which are all encouraging signs that he will be headed in the right direction for Sunday.
Rashawn Melvin, who I believe... Did he play every play on defense?
Yeah, I think if he missed one any, short. It was one, yeah. Melvin has been on the injury report since the regular season began, right? And he's only missed, I think, one snap this week, no snaps last week, and I think he missed one snap in week one. So this is pretty standard. They give him a nice good rest to let him heal up. He's limited then Thursday and Friday, and then come Sunday, he plays every snap or all but one snap. So I'm not overly worried about Melvin right now. He looks in good. He should probably be in good shape if this pattern continues.
Deshaun Hand, there's a Deshaun Hand sighting.
Yeah, he's again getting limited drills, which are all encouraging signs. He's in pads today, so that's an encouraging sign. It's just a kind of a crapshoot with him. Like there's no real info coming out. We haven't seen him hit the field other than just in these drills, and so it's still kind of hard to tell with him. I would not be surprised if he was out again this week, but then coming out of the bye, it could be ready to go for the Packers.
Three guys no longer listed on the injury report, and I think all three of them played a lot on Sunday. Jared Davis, Taylor Decker played every snap, and CJ Moore, they all seemed to be back relatively full health.
Yeah, Davis played 88%. He thought he might have re-injured himself, so he took a couple, like I said, one series off, but then came back and finished it. CJ Moore played his normal allotment of special team snaps, and they are all not on the injury report this week, so that's an encouraging sign that they should be good moving forward.
All right, there's a couple roster moves, both rather boring. Chris Lacy, who we know rather well, has been brought back.
Yeah, he was cut to make room for Marvin Hall over the weekend. So he left, he cleared waivers. Now the Lions sign him to the practice squad.
Ray Smith, defensive tackle.
Out of Boston College, was an undrafted free agent, spent all the way through training camp with the Lions. The basic rule with him here is if Deshaun Hand is limited and Mike Daniels is out, you need another defensive tackle who knows the system, and Ray Smith is that guy.
Generically named Ray Smith. Next release is former LSU running back Nick Brossette.
Yeah, and then Jonathan Wynn was the other one. Both these guys have been on and off at least two times of the practice squad.
The rotating door that is the Lions practice squad. Yep. Still no Bo Nunn. We may have seen the last of them in the AAF.
I would think so.
All right, let's talk a little bit about those Philadelphia Eagles. The biggest story, the biggest story coming out of the game as far as player personnel-wise is that Jamal Agnew did not fumble any kickoff or punt returns, and not only that, returned a kickoff for a touchdown. He had a nice punt return
For 24.
After Amendola went out.
Yeah, his punt return was for 24 yards. His kickoff return was for 100.
And that's really where if you look at the total yardage between both teams, which is not always indicative of the final score, the Eagles definitely outgained the Lions. They passed for more yards, and they definitely ran for more yards. Where the Lions balanced themselves out were with Jamal Agnew returning kicks
for 124 yards, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's how you make up that offensive, or lack of, I guess, offensive production, right? What a well-blocked play. Such a
nice kickoff return.
It was. And the athletic Chris Burke broke it down. We've seen other people write things about it. There were just so many good efforts made by the blockers in order to set up a lane for him to, and then it's up to him that he has to make one guy miss, and he makes that guy miss early, and then he's just got to follow his setup. You know, the Lions have made an adjustment on their deep blockers that not a lot of other teams have, but I wouldn't be surprised if some other teams start to follow suit with this. And so with the new rules, right, you have to have eight guys up within 15 yards of the line of scrimmage, and then you can have two guys deep, and then your kick returner. So that's your 11 guys. And over the last, like, year plus the three games, those guys have typically been, like, fullbacks and linebackers that have been back there. What the Lions did, though, is they put J.D. McKissic and Ty Johnson. They're two speedy running backs. And the concept with this is I want more speed and more athleticism in that initial blocking wave where they can wait for a guy, get to a guy, make a block, and then that should allow Agnew some more breathing room. Before, the Lions were using Bowden and Zenner in that role, and they weren't getting the production. The switch to McKissic and Johnson, you can see on the way that McKissic comes across the face of Agnew to make a block is something that neither Zenner nor Bowden would have been able to do. So it was kind of a sneaky, subtle move, but that addition of athleticism is really what made that a 100-yard touch, what sprung him loose for 100 yards, rather than something that could have been caught for, you know, a tackle at like the 15-yard line.
All right, next up, week one, it was a lot of Danny Amendola and, of course, a whole ton of T.J. Hockenson. Week two, it was Kenny Golladay.
Yep.
Week three, Marvin Jones had his big day.
Yep, and this speaks to Bevel, right, being able, and Stafford, I guess, to that fact. Bevel's not scared of dialing up things to go to any of these four guys because, realistically, these are your four pass catchers.
Outside playmakers.
Yeah. Right, yeah,
you could say Johnson's gets involved in the passing game as well.
Yeah, but he's not going to be a guy. But
what about Nick Bodden? You know, the hurdling defenders.
It was very impressive, but I don't think Johnson's ever going to have a game where he goes for 100. You know what I mean?
No, unless he broke like a 75-yarder.
Right, exactly. But yeah, it's nice to see how Bevel spreads it around, and he now has four 100-yard pass catchers, four different 100-yard pass catchers through three games.
Amendola had 100 yards in week one?
Yep. Oh, yep. Okay. Amendola and Hawk, and then Kenny, and then, yeah, like you said, Marvin. So they're the only team in the league that has four of them like that. And, you know, there's you have to give some credit to Stafford for being able to find Marvin. You have to give some credit to Marvin, who saw his separation get better. His average separation is typically around 2 yards, which is amongst the lower end of the league. It was up over three this game, which shows that, you know, he was making efforts that were finding ways for him to get open, and then Stafford was in turn finding him. Marvin made three really big catches at critical times in that third, fourth quarter, at the end of the third, beginning of the fourth, that really helped them finalize that event, what ended up being the game-winning touchdown.
Well, for everything we say positive, I have to bring in something to say negative. Stafford had a difficult time finding anybody else. 101 yards passing, all mm-hmm. to Marvin Jones, 100 to the rest of the team. So, I mean, you got to credit the Eagles' defense. It's mm-hmm. not a bad defense at all.
Kenny's separation is usually around like 2.1, which again is a little bit better than Marvin. His separation was 1.0 against the Eagles, which was the worst in the league.
Led to two catches for 17 yards.
He had a tough game. He had a tough game, and for whatever reason, he had a hard time getting separation from them. And the Eagles, like you said, did a nice job focusing on Kenny and bottling him up.
Kerryon Johnson, his role is increasing in the offense, but the negative thing we've seen over the last 3 weeks, the rushing yardage totals for the team, although they remain committed to the run, have been decreasing week after week.
Yeah, and so when C.J. Anderson was released after week two, the thought process was those snaps were going to shift
T.J.
to Ty Johnson.
No, Ty Johnson,
right?
Excuse me.
Yep. And but instead, they went to Kerryon. So Kerryon went from getting 55% of the snaps to now getting 75% of the snaps. And he, in turn, also got all of C.J. Anderson's situational work, and he also got all of C.J. Anderson's eight-man boxes. So next-gen stats tracks how many eight-man boxes, eight-plus man boxes that running backs face. And last week, Kerryon faced 60% of his runs were against an eight-man front or eight-plus man front. That was the most in the league, right? So the Eagles' game plan was focus on Kenny, load the box, and then that's what freed up Marvin, right? And then it's that's why you see a lot of the passes ending up going Marvin's way. And I'm actually a little surprised they didn't go to Amendola's way a little bit more. But yeah, so Kerryon has been facing these difficult fronts.
And you made him aware of that, and he had to respond to it.
Yeah, he made a nice joke about he's a good person and doesn't deserve it, and I was pretty funny. And so it's going to be interesting this week because I don't know if the Chiefs are going
how
to try.
How they're going to game plan this.
Yeah, because the Chiefs, and we'll get to this, are one of the worst run defenses in the league. So we'll see if things change for Kerryon this week.
All right, Kerryon Johnson, 20 carries, 36 yards, although he did have the touchdown run.
Yep.
Only caught one pass, 7 yards. J.D. McKissic, aforementioned. With the nice, was that a screen play? With the 40, well, not a screen
play. It was a
run. It was a run, yeah. It was a 44-yard run.
Yeah. You know, the one thing.
Outpace them.
The one thing that Bevel said, and this was corroborated by some of the other people who have done who did film studies this week focusing on the run. It seems like, so first of all, the interior offensive line is playing very well. They're playing the run well. They're playing the pass well. The interior offensive line is doing very well. The tackles are playing the pass well. They're struggling a little bit in the run game. And you're getting small errors from blocking fullback or blocking tight end or blocking receiver. And those little errors seem to be costing them opportunities in the run game. And if they can start to fix some of those errors, we should start to see some of the success in the run game increase, at least that in theory, right? Because it seems like from an offensive line perspective, they're doing a lot of the things that they're supposed to be doing. There's some success. There's some lack of success that's happening on the perimeter that's causing problems.
We're going to be moving on to defense shortly, so I got to ask this question. Graham Glasgow did not play 100% of the snaps on offense. He only played 78%. It's around 60 plays or 50 plays.
Yeah, they've been rotating Wiggins in.
What's
all
the
year.
Concern here?
I don't. They've done it all year.
And remember, he was on second team or third team offense. There's something going on here.
He was
in training camp.
Yeah, he was first team. Then he went to second team when Crosby got hurt because they needed a right tackle, and so he went back. And then he lost his starting job to Joe Dahl. But Joe Dahl's also losing snaps to Kenny Wiggins, and that's
not surprising. I'm more surprised about Glasgow not being on the field all the time.
I am not 100% sure on why this is still happening.
Do we have the grades on Glasgow?
I think Glasgow and Dahl are both in the top, like, 16. They're both in the... And Frank Ragnow is the number two center overall and number one in run blocking.
And he's playing every down.
Yeah. But my point
is a freshness concern.
I don't know exactly that Patricia's
mom about this.
No, he has said that Wiggins brings an aspect to his game that they like, that they want to keep getting him involved, and he's playing very well in the run game. But so are the other two. I really am not clear on why they're rotating and continue to rotate. If I'm the coaches,
I'm glad about this.
Yeah, I mean, again, we've all asked questions about it. We're getting a standard line, and it's something that's happened all three games. And from my standpoint, I think it has to be disruptive to the communication, and because you're putting him at right guard for a series, and then you're putting him at left guard for a series, and then he's on the bench. Like, it's like in college, you got two quarterbacks. Why are you rotating one quarterback in and throwing that rhythm off? You know what I mean? Like, It's the same concept.
Do teams still do that in college football? Oh. There's a lot less than when we were kids. Oh. It was epidemic, but nowadays it doesn't happen.
No, it still happens, but this is what it reminds me of. It's that you're throwing a guy in and you're messing up rhythm. I don't know if they're doing it because they want to keep Wiggins fresh in case of an injury, but it just seems Look, even when they put Wiggins in, they're still finding success on the interior. So it's still working. I just don't. I personally am not a big fan of this.
All right, Quandre Diggs didn't play his best game.
No, he missed a tackle on the Aguilar touchdown. He had a couple other misses. I don't have the grade on him. I have to imagine it was low. It was one of the. It was, in my opinion, just the two times I watched the game, it might have been his worst game in the last year plus. You know what I mean? It's like he had a hard time, and hopefully that gets corrected because they'll need him to play a key role this week.
All right. Still, I guess the big story about the defense, there were zero sacks over the last two games, so zero sacks again on Sunday. It's very concerning, but there's a but. They've won these games. So, you know, Mr. Brightside sitting across from me would say, well, just wait till they get it going, when they start getting a lot of pressure and they start converting that into sacks.
To clarify, they did have a couple sacks last game. The defense did. The offensive line hasn't allowed sacks. I guess I probably threw you off.
You probably put it in the wrong order. I did have a note written down, and I didn't know that was pressure. A stat. They've been lacking in pressure. Sure. We have not been pressuring the quarterback.
I agree with you. I agree with you on that. The pressure from the defensive line has been inconsistent. And I think a lot of that is you're missing Deshaun Hand. I think a lot of that is Mike Daniels goes out early. But, he's not going to scheme blitzes, right? And because he doesn't want to scheme those blitzes unless he has to, then you're just going to count on the first three or four guys getting done what they need to get done, right? And right now the pressures are down, but I think that's really kind of just the way the scheme works, right?
Yeah, I think Trey Flowers got off the schneid. He had a sack.
Sure.
So I guess that's a positive sign. But yeah, still a lot of negatives that we're not getting a lot of.
He got credit for a couple pressures. I don't have the number in front of me. But he had about 8 tackles. And he's doing a lot of the dirty work, like occupying blockers. And they're using him in different sets. And they're using him in the Deshaun Hand role where he's playing nose tackle and pass rushing in those obvious NASCAR pass rushing situations. But the lack of pressure is definitely is something that they need to correct, because this week
it's going to be paramount.
It's going to be even more problematic because
you have to disrupt an MVP quarterback.
Well, and the Ravens didn't get a whole lot of pressure, and he did well with that. And when they finally got pressure in the back half,
Tim Jernigan got some pressure in that game.
Oh, against
Baltimore. The Baltimore
defensive tackle. Sorry. You're right. Yes. I don't know what they're going to do to correct that. You know, I think Flowers getting healthy is going to help. I think Harrison getting more accustomed is going to help. Losing Daniels is going to hurt. You're relying on Kevin Strong to make up some of that, and that's a tough ask for an undrafted rookie.
All right.
One more, I think.
One more. It's about all the mistakes the Eagles made. 7 drop passes, I believe. They made a mistake after blocking a field goal where they didn't convert for a touchdown.
They
had to get the ball at the 50 instead of down at the 20.
Yeah, the Chargers did the same thing. The Chargers had mistakes as well. And the big thing with the Lions this year, and I think this has been the difference between this year's team and last year's team, is that when teams are making mistakes, even though the Lions are doing old habits, they're letting their foot off the gas when they have a big lead. The difference between last year and this year, though, is that when those teams make the mistakes, they make them pay. And that's not something they did last year. When you can hold teams accountable for their mistakes on defense, it's the difference between getting a win and getting, and you know, and then, or getting a loss or even tying the game, right? And the last 2 weeks, they've found a way on defense to capitalize on the opponent's mistakes.
Thank goodness.
Right?
Because they really tried to lose that one on Sunday.
Well, you know, but you could say the same thing about the Chargers. Like, they when you let your foot up off the gas, you create an opportunity.
Yeah, no, and we got to learn. Hopefully, they did a little better job of it.
I agree.
On Sunday.
I agree.
And they're hopefully learning from this, because this is happening way too often.
Well, in this week, if the same pattern holds, let's say they jump out to a lead again, and they take their foot off the gas here, well, then it's going to be problematic, because the Chiefs have the firepower to get back in it, whereas the Chargers and the Eagles didn't, and that was, you know, like I said, the big difference.
All right, moving on to the Kansas City Chiefs. Line is Chiefs by 6.5, even though it'll be played in the cozy confines of Ford Field,
right.
Over under 53.5. So they're expecting a little bit. They're expecting some scoring. Chiefs did beat the Ravens 33-28 on Sunday.
Yeah, they're 3-0. The Lions and the Chiefs are one of two games pitting undefeated teams against each other. The other one being the Patriots Bills, right?
Yeah, that tussle.
And so those are both 3-0
teams. Josh Allen versus Tom Brady. Josh Allen, 3-0. All right. Well, you'll pass on this one for now.
You know, so I think one of the reasons the over-under is so high is because the Chiefs put up points, you know? And if a team is going to hang with the Chiefs, they're going to have to be able to put up points as well. Now, will the Lions try and offset that strategy? Yeah, I think they may, but will they be successful? I think that's another story, and we'll get into that when we break it down a little bit more.
All right, so Walt Anderson's the referee. He's averaging 17 penalties a game.
That's a lot.
So, yeah, over two, higher than what is normal for an NFL officiating crew.
Mm-hmm.
On the TV is going to be Kevin Burkhardt, Charles Davis with Pam Oliver on the sidelines. I believe this is Fox's number two crew, which subs in as the number one crew when Joe Buck is sucked in by baseball. But I could be wrong about that.
It makes sense. It's a big game. Like I said, undefeated teams. So it's going to draw a larger, you know, broadcasting crew.
All right. So Chiefs well known for being head coached by Andy Reid. Perfect coach for his town. He looks like he eats a lot of ribs, a lot of Kansas City-style ribs. Offense averages 487 yards a game, and that's basically like a good college team.
Right. So Andy Reid runs a West Coast vertical attack, and he
almost similar to Daryl Bevel,
well,
just a lot better.
But here's the thing: when you go back to the confines of Green Bay in the early 90s,
they were there together.
Andy Reid, well, almost. Andy Reid was there, and underneath Andy Reid was. Oh, now I'm blanking on his name. It was the Vikings offensive coordinator for a long time. Oh, man, I'm blanking on it. All right, I apologize. He was like the quarterback's coach for the Vikings, and then he is the one who in turn taught Daryl Bevel. So Bevel actually comes from the Andy Reid coaching tree. So the difference, though, between Andy Reid's scheme and, I guess, Daryl Bevel's scheme is Andy Reid's scheme is more focused on quicker passes and deep shots, whereas Bevel's scheme is more focused on play action and deep shots. And then there's more of a focus on the running game with Bevel as well. So you end up getting more West Coast concepts with Andy Reid, more traditional West Coast concepts. But then when you add in a big-armed quarterback who's also accurate in Mahomes, that just increases the viability, I guess, of the offense. So, like, since in the last 25 games, the Chiefs have scored 25 points in each of the last 25 games. That's a crazy number. And Mahomes has never scored less than 26 in any game he's ever played in the NFL. That's a big reason why that Vegas line is over-under at 53. Because Mahomes puts up, if Mahomes is quarterbacking a team, they put up 26 points at a minimum. That's just the way it's been in the NFL. So that right there dictates that over-under line. In the last two games, just in the last two games, in the second quarter alone, we saw the Chiefs put up 51 points in just the second quarter in the last two games. That's an astounding number of points to put up just in one quarter. And then they're shutting teams out in that quarter as well. So that second quarter is going to be a big pivotal quarter for this matchup. The Lions are going to want to make sure that they're, you know, finding a way to hold the ball or finding a way to get points in that second quarter, because that's really been where the Chiefs have dominated in the past three games. What's Baltimore did in this last game was they decided at halftime that they were going to shift to the run and be more run focused, and that was a big difference. They controlled the ball more. They kept Mahomes on the sidelines. The third quarter ended up being a 7-7 tie with a late touchdown from the Chiefs capitalizing on a Baltimore mistake. But then in the fourth quarter, Baltimore outscored them 12-3, even though it was still in a loss, because Baltimore, again, they made a handful of mistakes that, you know, like the Lions, the Chiefs found ways to capitalize on, and that's really what winning teams do. So that run game is going to be, again, we've talked about how pivotal that's going to be. It's been a struggle for the Lions. It's been a weakness for the Chiefs.
Surrendered 203 yards on the ground to the Ravens.
Yep, and what do they give up, like 6.2?
It's quite high. 23, 31, 32 carries. So yeah, it's over 6 yards a pop.
Yeah, it's and that's for the season, not just last game. Oh. For the season, it's 6.2 a game. So they've struggled against the run. So I am expecting the Lions to, the basic game plan is going to be run the ball with Kerryon Johnson, see if you can get into that, you know, heavy average per carry, keep Mahomes on the sideline, control the game, limit possessions, and then try and score. And I think that's their, in a simplistic, you know, game plan, I think that's really what it's going to be, because you don't want Mahomes out there as much as you can. You want to keep him off to the sidelines, and that ties right into, you know, what I guess Patricia's overall philosophy is. So the Chiefs just have so much speed on offense that defenses end up dropping into zones. And when they drop into zones, Mahomes is accurate enough to start hitting the errors in those zones. And we saw that a lot against Baltimore. The Chiefs had big plays based on Baltimore breakdowns and coverage. So you're going to have to be fundamentally sound on defense, especially on the back end. And you're going to have to try and slow down, because you're really not going to stop Mahomes.
All right, let's dig into Eric Bieniemy's offense. I don't think we have to say much more about reigning MVP Patrick Mahomes. So we'll move on. The running back crew, led by LeSean McCoy, finally reunited with Coach Reed after their time in Philadelphia together.
Yeah, you know, he's injured, right? He had an ankle that he had going into week two. And then that cost him time in week two. Then it cost him time in week three. He had to leave early. He only saw around half of the snaps on offense. The other half went to Darrell Williams,
which confuses many fantasy owners for Damian Williams, also on the same roster, also injured.
Right. Yeah, and he didn't play. So McCoy ends up being a guy that is really well suited for this offense, but the injury is going to limit him. So we'll see what happens there. I mean, he didn't play today or didn't practice today, so it could just be rest, but it could be something a little bit more, I guess, because but he played well against the Ravens. They used him on a lot of swing passes, and they find a way to get the ball in his hand. Oh, by the way, it just hit me. Brad Childress.
Oh, he was a head coach, too.
Yeah. Brad Childress was Bevel's mentor, who was Andy Reid's disciple. Sorry, that just popped in my head right there when we were talking about McCoy.
All right, so next up is Kansas City's probably most dangerous position group, their wide receivers, led by somebody who might be considered very dangerous, Tyreek Hill, but we likely won't see him on Sunday. I'm sorry.
No.
That was inappropriate.
No,
too soon?
It was accurate. Yeah. That's what it was. No, he's not going to play, at least from everything we're gathering, right? He's hurt and going to be out. He didn't practice again this week. He missed last week.
But that doesn't seem to matter because the other guys they've got are pretty good.
Yeah, you know, Watkins is their number one. DeMarcus Robinson has been stepping up as their number two. He's caught 3 touchdown passes in the last 2 games. And then Mecole Hardman is the Tyreek Hill replacement. And in my opinion, he's just as fast.
Yeah.
And seems to be a better person. So that helps. But
I don't know if that helps you with your football
player. Well, no, but it helps my morality, I guess.
All right.
So he caught a, you know, his 83-yard touchdown pass was all over the place. Busted coverage in the secondary. And it was...
Well, it takes those one play, and Mahomes seems to find those open areas
absolutely.
And exploit a defense.
Absolutely. You can't have busted coverage against Mahomes because the way the offense is designed is it's designed to exploit them. And he can do that. And he has done that. And he puts the ball in Hardman's hands, and Hardman goes. And they find ways to get Hardman the ball on like jet sweeps and quick passes and screens. And they do a whole bunch of stuff to try and get the ball in Hardman's hands. And kid's got some really good speed. I mean, like really good speed. One of the fastest players in this last draft. And so he makes the most of it.
They might also see a little bit of DeAnthony Thomas, right? But he's not as dangerous as the other guys.
Yeah.
All right, so more of extension of the receivers is Travis Kelce, who may be the best tight end in the NFL, at least most valuable fantasy tight end in the NFL.
Sure. I think playing Ertz last week gave them a little bit of a game plan on how they can attack Kelce. But the problem is that the Lions found most of their success by doubling Kelce or Ertz last week. I don't know if they can afford to double Kelce in this one.
No, because there's plenty of other options.
Right? I mean, if you have Darius Slay and you say, all right, Darius Slay can lock down Watkins and he's ready to go. And then you think, okay, I can match up Mathis with Robinson and I'm okay with that. And let's say I want to put a linebacker underneath and Tracy Walker over the top of Kelce. Okay. Well, then you still have Hardman up against Coleman. And that's not terrible, but it's also you're losing a little bit from a speed standpoint. Hardman's much faster. And so you're still going to have a hard time. I mean, and I think that might actually be the game plan because zone coverage doesn't work a whole lot. Mahomes is real good at picking them off. But I wouldn't be surprised to see them just try and lock up Melvin and Slay on 2 of these guys, try and let Coleman hang with Hardman, and then use a safety and a linebacker to bracket Kelce, leave Quandre Diggs as that kind of center fielder, and then just hope you get home with your front 4. And I think that will be the basic strategy. And that's really not a terrible matchup to put out on the field. The big question is, who's the underneath linebacker that's going to play with Tracy Walker? Could be Jalen Reeves-Maybin would be the most ideally suited, but I don't know if you can afford to put him out there in that length of capacity, I guess, right? So maybe you drop Jared Davis, but he's not always been the best in coverage. You're not going to use Tobias or really Christian Jones from an impactful standpoint. So I don't know if they have a great underneath option right now that they can use to bracket. So they might end up just saying, all right, Tracy, we tried you one-on-one with Ertz in the first half. Let's see if you can one-on-one with Kelce and see if you can make your money, because he did okay with Ertz. He needed some help to really shut him down in that second half, but it's not terrible. And he's coming off of just having to face a really high-end tight end. He's just got to be able, they might just rely on him to say, let's see what you can do, kid.
All right, the offensive line, not very well known, but good. Led by Eric Fisher, local guy who grew up right near the podcast studio, but probably not going to play on Sunday.
Yeah, no, he looks like he's going to be out. didn't practice this week. Cameron Irving out of Florida State via the Browns is his replacement. They feel confident in him. He's not as good as Fisher. Let me put it that way.
Do we have anything to add about the offense? They're not big name guys. Mitchell Schwartz, right tackle. He's an all right player.
He might be I think Mitchell Schwartz is probably the best right tackle in the league. Okay, he hasn't given up a sack yet. He doesn't give up a whole lot of pressures. He's a very good right tackle. He's going to be very problematic for Devin Kennard. If you're the Lions, you're hoping that Flowers is going to get the best of Cameron Irving. I don't think you're going to be hoping Kennard continues his success that he's had this year against Mitchell Schwartz. I think Mitchell Schwartz is probably going to get the arrow in his favor in a lot of categories against Kennard.
Yeah, and I don't know what if it's talking about the rest of this offensive line. The Lions haven't been getting a lot of pressure, so you know this might be a big plus for the Chiefs.
Well, that's the trick, right? What can Snacks do? How much can he disrupt it? Can Ashawn has played well? Can he continue to get production out of Ashawn? Even if Kennard is just taking Schwartz out of the equation and just letting the other three play against the remaining four. That's okay. I'm expecting to see just a focus on contain. I'm expecting to see them try and play their gap responsibility and just hope that their back-end coverage holds up, which it has in the past. But that strategy allows you to give up a lot of yards. That kind of bend-don't-break mentality that they have, I think they're going to give up yards, and I think they're going to try and lock it down when they get in the red zone and try not to give up points. I think that's the strategy with the, defending this offense.
All right.
Give up yards, not points.
Well, and that's a little bit of the Patriot way there, too. Yeah, a lot of bend-don't-break.
Sure.
Flipping over to the defensive side of the ball for the Chiefs, headed up by Steve Spagnuolo, a former Giants fame.
Yeah,
the defensive line can pressure the quarterback, but as we mentioned, not the greatest at stopping the run. Outside, the defensive ends include Alex Okafor and Michigan man Frank Clark.
Yeah.
That's why I did it.
He got kicked out of Michigan.
And in the middle, Derek Nandy and Chris Jones.
Chris Jones is very underrated. He's a nose tackle.
Big nose tackle.
Yeah, can rush the passer, and he's good against the run. He's going to be their best one against the run. Nandy should be a good pass run defender, but he's struggled. You can run on Clark. You can run on Ogba. And that's really what's been happening. A lot of zone motion from the Ravens last week. And they get this line moving, and when they get this line moving, they just let the back pick the hole because this line isn't meant to move. It's not like the Chiefs' lines of pass were meant to move and be able to go sideline to sideline. This Chiefs' line is very different. Like you said, they have some pass rushing capability in Clark and Ogba, and even Jones up the middle, but The run defense is problematic for this team, which is really where I think the focus is going to be for the Lions.
Linebackers, they play a lot of just nickel look.
Yeah.
Two linebackers they use, Damian Wilson and Anthony Hitchens.
Yeah, and they've got other big names like Darren Lee and Reggie Ragland.
Reggie Ragland, of Alabama fame.
Yep, they don't get as much work. Big thing with this linebacker crew is because the defensive line struggles against the run, the linebackers will sell out to stop the run. And when they sell out to stop the run, they leave that big open space in the middle of the field right behind them. Remember, it's the same thing the Lions defense under Terrell Austin used to do. The linebackers would flow downfield to stop the run because the defensive line wasn't doing it. And when they would flow to stop the run, susceptible to play action, and then
susceptible to Hockenson.
And then you just drop
it. Imagine what all these old no-name tight ends did against the Lions over those last couple of years of Terrell Austin's defense.
That's exactly right. This is a try and establish the run with carry-on, and then when you start establishing a run, slip in play action, Hockenson should drop right in behind, and then you should be able to, boom, hit Hockenson in those little center-of-the-field gaps behind there.
All right. Moving to the defensive secondary, the corners are Charvarius Ward and Bashaud Breeland, with Rashad Fenton as the nickel man.
And they actually have, Fenton is what, their sixth rounder?
Sixth round pick.
They've used Kendall Fuller a little bit more in that spot against the Ravens anyway. They liked Fuller. Fuller's one of the Fuller brothers.
The team of Fuller brothers. Right?
And so they'll use those three a lot and from a cornerback standpoint. And then they'll use their safeties out there a lot because, like you said, they give a lot of nickel looks. The corners are not anything spectacular. They're fine. They fit the bill, but they're not the corners that they used to have on this roster. Remember, this team used to have some very impactful corners, and those are no longer.
They're gone.
So you've got, if you can get one-on-ones with Kenny and Marvin, then you can have a similar type situation to what you had last week. If one of them is starting to get separation, then you can start to get those outside spots as well.
We got a big name safety though, the Honey Badger, Tyrann Mathieu.
Yeah, and you know, and he's the best player in their secondary, right? He can be in the middle of the field. He can get sideline to sideline. He can be disruptive again as assisting with a double covering a guy. He can come up and try and help out as a support against the run. He can play at the linebacker level. He can play a little deeper. He's got a lot of range. But again, he's undersized. And it's kind of like in week one when we talked about Buda Baker. If they can get Hawkinson in the back or in behind those linebackers, the Honey Badger doesn't – he's good and physical – but he doesn't have the size of Hawkinson. And Hawkinson should be able to just basketball him up and be able to get some of these high balls from him.
All right, we're going to see a lot of Juan Thornhill and Daniel Sorensen.
Yeah, Juan Thornhill out of Virginia was one of their second-round picks. I like him a lot. I really thought the Lions would be interested in him. He didn't hang around until the third round, which is when they targeted that safety in Will Harris. But Thornhill's a nice center fielder. With the Honey Badger being more of the up safety, you need a back safety in Thornhill. And he is a rookie, and he makes rookie mistakes. So Sorensen is, I think, technically listed as their starter, but Thornhill plays more. And I don't think Sorensen's injured, so I think it's just kind of a they prefer Thornhill.
It's a quirk.
But he is
a depth chart quirk.
Yeah. And as good as much as I like Thornhill and I think there's a future, I think he is susceptible to rookie mistakes. And the way Stafford can manipulate safeties, especially the center field safeties, I think this could be a problem area for the Chiefs if he falls in love with looking at where Stafford is sending signals. Because he has a real good job of fading those.
All right, Chiefs specialist, Dustin Colquitt, your punter. Harrison Butker's the kicker. They're both decent.
Yeah, Butker missed an extra point last week.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's missed one field goal, I think, this year. So, he's okay.
James Winchester does the long snapping. And, Tyreek Hill, extremely dangerous return man, but we won't see him. So, We'll see a couple of the other receivers probably. Hardman returning.
Yeah, that makes sense. And, you know, in the Baltimore game, it was... Justin Tucker just kicked every kickoff out of the end zone, so we never really saw an end zone come out. And then the punts were usually angled. I didn't get to see a lot of special teams from the Chiefs last week.
You're ho-humming this one, Eric. You're ho-humming this game.
I can tell you that... Okay, so every week I create a Twitter list that I put into my tweet deck so I can see all the happenings from the beat writers of the opposing team. And... the love that is being given to Kansas City right now
is well deserved.
Is out of control. The stuff that they're saying,
the Final Four team last year.
The stuff that they're saying about them is it's getting a bit ridiculous. Look, they're a good team. They got a great offense. Their defense is okay. Their offense is really hard to stop, but they. One of the reporters said
Russian is cut.
One of the reporters said This is football nirvana, what we're watching right now. This is not...
People make big statements nowadays. But that's what they do.
This is not football nirvana, okay? It's a nice blend of a nice marriage. But you know what? I'm over the ridiculousness of anointing them automatically in the Super Bowl. They're in the same division or the same league as the Patriots, and I don't see the Patriots slowing down anytime soon. And I think Casey's good. I don't think they're unbeatable, though.
Well, you can put your money where your mouth is. What is your prediction for the game score?
I think it's going to be tight. I think you're going to see points put up on the board no matter what they want to do. I think it's going to score. And I think it's going to be... I'm going to call it... I'm going to call the one-point game.
Oh,
28-27.
In favor of?
Are
you going to have them 4-0 on the year?
I don't know. This is a hard one because I think the Chiefs are so favored. I'm also worried that if I pick the Lions, that it'll be like a reverse jinx because I picked the Eagles last week and then they won, right? And so I don't want to go against it. But I think this team's beatable. The problem is I think the Lions have to play a lot safer than they have been. I'll call it a 28-27 Chiefs victory.
Oh.
Reluctantly.
I'll go on the other side of the gambling line. I'll have Chiefs 31-24.
Okay.
This touchdown win.
Yeah, look. I think the Chiefs are going to score 26 because they do. That's what they have every time, right? And so if you got to score 26 to keep up with them, I don't know what's going to happen. I think Lions will play it safe and could be a problem if they play it too safe.
We got a bunch of shout outs this week. We love that. Thank you, everybody, for giving us some more reviews.
Yeah, 4 ratings, 3 reviews.
Andrew, keep it up, everyone.
Andrew Jeter, FOFFP King, and Die Hard Lion all had nice things to say. Again, people who are, I've been listening for a while. Happy to give a review. Nice to see people making the time because I know everyone's busy. And
yeah, no, that's the big thing. You know, you take time out of your day and review us, and that's great. We really love it.
Yeah.
In fact, Eric just experienced his new most favorite review of all the dozens and dozens of written reviews we've received.
Yeah, the FOFFP King wanted to know who Joe Caney is.
Yeah, and you know, it's everything's working out just the way I planned. He can't find me, and so therefore nobody else can. I make a good caddy for Eric. I try to lead him along the way.
All right, well, we can leave it at that.
Yeah, no, that's it. So, hey, if you guys get a chance, go out there and rate us. You know, we had a great, well, it wasn't a great, we got a win against the Eagles. 2-0-1, hard to believe they'd be undefeated after 3 games, first time since 2011.
Oh, okay.
Right? They've been unbeaten this long. So hopefully they keep it up Sunday. It's a tall task. And we'll see what happens against the Chiefs. Hopefully it's a good game. Hopefully it's no stink bomb.
Yeah, I think the game plan's there, and I think they have the horses to do it. I just don't know if the coaches can stay out of their own way.
Anything can happen on, any given Sunday. That's a bad, whatever. It's the name of a movie. All right. So everybody take care out there. Everybody enjoy the game on Sunday. And until next time, let's go Lions.